año y esperamos que sea de su agrado este programa. Va a ser muy especial. Vamos a estar conversando con un compañero que siempre nos ha acompañado durante todo este tiempo y también es parte de un movimiento organizado aquí en Los Ángeles, y también el motivo de este programa es para tocar ahí a la puerta de su conciencia. Hoy no vamos a tener entrevistas, vamos a tener música que ojalá, esperamos que les diga algo.
Hoy rigurosamente, hoy ha nacido un nuevo muerto. Ha nacido un nuevo niño en la calle. La calle será su escuela, su universidad, su casa. El asfalto su morada. Y la sociedad urbana le irá formando en secreto. Y el suburbio le hará cama y será alarma. Y el arrabal le hará diestro de la lata y del solar. Mentiroso, chamullante, maestro de la miseria, descuidero, estafador, embaucador, anarquista, o quién sabe, quién sabe si quizás antes de morirse o matarse podrá del hambre vengarse para ser puente o ser morada, o reventar tristemente en una asquerosa arcada con perdón para ser simplemente historia de una canción.
Caricia de mi tristeza, bálsamo de mi dolor, fuente de sabiduría, lucero de mi mañana, salud de mi enfermedad, manantial de mi alegría, consuelo de mis errores, copa de mi realidad, torre de mi valentía, pulso de mi corazón, grito de mi rebelión, rabia de mi libertad, ángel de mi soledad, madre mía, madre mía.
Todo pasa y todo queda, pero lo nuestro es pasar, pasar haciendo caminos, caminos sobre la mar. Nunca perseguí la gloria, ni dejar en la memoria de los hombres mi canción. Yo amo los mundos sutiles, ingrávidos y gentiles, como pompas de jabón. Me gusta verlos pintarse de sol y grana, volar bajo el cielo azul, temblar súbitamente y quebrarse. Nunca perseguí la gloria.
Caminante, son tus huellas el camino y nada más. Caminante, no hay camino, se hace camino al andar. Al andar se hace camino y al volver la vista atrás se ve la senda que nunca se ha de volver a pisar. Caminante, no hay camino, sino estelas en la mar.
Y gracias por la música, música buena. Y entonces en inglés, thank you and welcome now to Bathrop Spears Broadside. Stay tuned for 2.5 hours of Christmas Eve different kind of cheeriness, the cheeriness of the, well, the chilliness of the outdoors, and some more talk about civil rights downtown by those who are struggling. Stay tuned.
This one goes out to Hawaii. to my beautiful goddess friend in Hawaii. Her name's Haiku. Blessings, Haiku. Well, she calls herself Haikui. She's so beautiful, sweet, and gooey. Well, she calls herself Haikui. She's so beautiful, sweet, and groovy. When she smiles with me with her cosmic. Well, she calls herself Haikui. She's so beautiful, sweet, and ooey. I love you, Haikui. You're so ooey, ooey. When she smiles with me with her cosmic eyes, the world stops and we get off and off and off and become one, one.
I'd like to tell a story about some thugs in all their glory, trying to get their name on the map. A reformed Mediterranean thought they'd have a party, but all they could come up with was a load of crap. That's what you are, that's what you stand for, it's just crap, a big pile of crap. It don't matter how you smell it, it don't matter how you sell it, it don't matter how you spell it. It's a load of crap. They said they would be different, politics with a new slant, a grassroots party for the little guy. Now major banks are backing it, and Bay Street boys are lining up for another piece of the capitalist pie. And that's just crap. Your corporate agenda's clear as glass. You can shove it up your ass. The workers, what we think, we'll tell you all crap really stinks. Watch out, we're gonna make you stink. Stink in your own crap. Now anti-immigrant, anti-gay, we're not gonna live that way. And women have the right to choose. AIDS is not a gay disease, and healthcare is not a luxury. And keep your religious zealotry out of our schools, cause that's just crap. Your bigoted ideas are the real disease. They're a load of crap. Got a message for you, Stockwell. A wetsuit cannot hide your smell. And if I believe it existed, I know you'd burn in hell. Now Stockwell Day, your party is over. Time for you to stew in your own crap and rejoin your friends, Fred Flintstone and Barney. Cause we've wiped your crappy ass right off the map. No one wants your crap. That's what you are, that's what you stand for. It's just crap, a right-wing pile of crap. Too late to start your groveling, cause the people are now shoveling to turn you and your bigotry into fertilizer.
And that was the unexpected number from A World to Win, Songs from the Struggle for Global Justice by Sarah Marlowe. The name of that song was I think it was, I'm not sure what it was, 5, 10. I think it was an extra song that was not mentioned on the back of the CD. Well, welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides, December 24th edition. I'm Robert Norse, and I'll be with you for 2 hours, perhaps joined in the studio by my co-host, Becky Johnson, who's due to come in. I had hoped to have an interview this evening with the former Homeless Service Center Director, Doug Loisel, but he's with his family doing a Christmas number, so that's going to have to wait. But he's promised me that we're going to get back to it probably maybe Sunday, maybe next Thursday. Doug was the guy who I've had on the air before, who made significant improvements in the Homeless Service Center before he was dumped, in part his fault for not fully revealing a pending charge to which he has now pleaded involving sexually importuning a minor, I believe that's what it was, down in Los Angeles. So the issue, however, for me is the improvements he made at the Homeless Service Center, what's happening there now, And I will be having an interview tonight with an anonymous woman who's been using the Homeless Service Center for about a year now and has seen it under three different managers, I think, Ken Cole, Letitia Schwartz, and then four administrations and three managers, and then Doug Loiseau, and then Letitia Schwartz again. But before that, let's begin with some street interviews. This is from the Wednesday Drum Circle. I think it was last Wednesday, but it might have been a week before that. I'm going to have to catch up on the date, but you can catch the gist of it, and hopefully you'll find it educational. We're actually going into an interview with Ronae, who has achieved some notoriety. She's a woman who has been serving food downtown, and presumably and hopefully will continue to do so every Sunday. That's in front of the Borders Bookshop at Soquel and Pacific, getting flack from former mayor and current council member and bookshop Santa Cruz family member Ryan Coonerty, who's also the business guy behind Next Space, I believe, at a business that's on the second floor of Cooper and Pacific. Let's hear a little of the street voices, or at least of her voice.
Group of people. However, with us here is
Ronae
and Mark. And Ronae, you say you're doing a beanies for a beanie drive. What is this?
Okay, so my friend calls it Beanies of Hope, and I don't know about that name, but anyway, through Facebook, we developed a group that people join and they hand make beanies, knit them, or crochet them, and we've handed out probably, lots and lots now. I can't count how many in the last few weeks. And a lot of the local churches have been networking with us to buy sleeping bags and socks and water and just all the things I like to distribute out here.
Well, I know that Huff is planning a little kind of post-memorial protest after the homeless celebration, or I should say memorial, where they read the names of the dead. It's Tuesday the 21st, I think. And Huff's going to be in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz singing Huff Christmas carols.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Sergeant Harms is coming downtown.
Are you inviting me?
You're always invited. I don't know about this guy, but you should definitely. No, you're invited. Any other reports from the street?
No, everything's going really well. Everything's peaceful. We're out there in front of Borders on Sunday after 2 o'clock. Nobody bothers us. The police officers look the other way. Hospitality is friends with us.
You're not doing anything illegal. I don't know why you have to look the other way.
No. We are. We're sitting on planter boxes.
Oh, for heaven's sake. My God. And blocking traffic, I know.
I know. But they took some of the benches away.
You can't have people just idly sitting around.
Well, I bring my own table and chairs and beach chairs.
You are. That's the initiative.
And invite people to sit around idly and eat.
Idling, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Chair out and offer free sitting. Sit for free. Just a nice, comfortable chair and just stand there and say, well, I'm letting you sit for free.
Sofas for sweethearts. That's what we can call it.
Give them a candy cane while they're sitting there, Anyway.
I work for donations.
Thank you, Mark and
Ronae.
The infamous Ronae.
I edit that properly there, Robert.
Certainly not. This is going to be untrammeled. We're talking to the notorious Bush criminal when...
But before we leave Ronae, I want to point out that she was the subject of a Sentinel story, and I think Becky Johnson may be in the studio later to discuss the story and the kind of back-and-forth dialogue or screamalogue that she's had with the various critics on the Sentinel website, also known as the Topics website, for those of you who are internet buffs. In fact, entering the studio right now is the very same Becker Becky Johnson. Welcome, Becky, to Free Radio.
Merry Christmas.
I'm glad you didn't come in here alone. I would have had to have arrested you, but luckily you have an escort in the station.
I want to join Beanies for Hope.
Beanies for Hope. I guess that's Rene's group, perhaps.
I'm all for Beanies
You're
for
a beanie,
Hope.
You're a beanie.
I'm a beanie fan.
How about Weenies for Hope? That could be my group.
I don't Weenies really know how to crochet, beanie. But I want to learn and make crocheted hats for beanies.
Okay, well, I don't know if you heard any of Rene's interview, because I know you just arrived and you might not have been listening on the radio.
I was listening in the car on the way.
Were you?
And I think your song was crap.
Oh, well, it probably was, actually. But that was Sarah Marlowe, who's...
I enjoyed it.
We'll be hearing, really, less so for me. She's usually much more tuneful and less caustic and the more... caustic can be good. I've been caustic on occasion, I suppose.
And I'm more forgiving of tuneless musicians.
Oh, to say the least. One can understand and appreciate that. We won't get into your...
singing debut.
We need some singing lesson people in the studio immediately, perhaps, to help help those of us who are singing challenged or tune twisted, in any case. You're tuned to Free Radio, by the way, in case you haven't guessed, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert. Name of the show, Bath Robes Pierre's Broadsides. That means you'll occasionally see me out wandering the avenue with a bathrobe, usually not, but at protests I do tend to put one on, as well as at the, sometimes if I find the clothing, a Santa suit. Actually wore a Santa suit and a Santa's cap in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. And that may be happening again this weekend, because it looks like we may have to show up to celebrate the...
Spirit of Compassion downtown.
The Downtown Association's Compassion, the Sentinel's Compassion.
And Ryan Coonerty's Compassion.
Ryan Coonerty's Compassion.
There's too much compassion.
Those of you who read the Sentinel, Coonerty and company did a very...
Counterproductive.
They described... Rene's activities and that of, I guess her group is called Compassion. I'm not quite sure what the exact name of it is. I'll look it up in a moment. It was dissed on the front page of the Sentinel, and there actually were some 200 comments back and forth with you, Becky, and a couple of others actually defending her. I think she even tried to defend herself at one point before she disappeared beneath the mire and the swamp of the Sentinel website. But
well, nothing unusual for me and my unchecked typing fingers.
You're a quick typist.
I'm a very fast typist.
You're the type, or perhaps you're the typist. Both. Anyway, the phone number here, in case people want to call in, is 427-3772-831, 427-3772. 427-FRSC, for those who don't know numbers. And you can also go online if you want to become a member of the collective, www.freakradio.org, and get more information. You can hear the show directly online at freakradio.org. You can catch archives. There's all kinds of things you can do at freeradio.org. You can also leave a message for us on the voicemail at 427-4523. That will get to the collective, or at least those who listen in on that message. And if you want to denounce us, well, go for it. If you want to praise us, you want to give us money, that's even better. Pass on equipment, give suggestions and helpful advice, whatever.
If you want to denounce Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, I would suggest the 423 Huff number.
That's correct.
And it's a very long answering machine message. You can leave a very long criticism, and we will consider it carefully.
Actually, it's not a long message, and it's not even a long outgoing or incoming. It used to be longer, but yes, 423-4833 is a good number to call if you want to catch me off air and you want to leave a message, or if you want more information about HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which you and I, Becky, have belonged to for, gosh, 15 years.
Well, you started in 89.
Years, something like that.
1989. I didn't join until 1996.
So, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a little more of this, I guess it's Wednesday the 17th, the 16th. This is a drum circle, and we heard Rene. We're going to hear a few more people on the street. If at any point you want to comment, just give me the high sign, and if you slip me the appropriate amount of money, I'll turn up your mic.
Pendulum, later. And later you say that there have been the tickets after you were acquitted of criminal pendulum pushing, even though you were in fact pushing the pendulum downtown. The other two tickets were dismissed.
Yes. In a word. Well, how's that for an exciting story? Thank you, Lather. Anything else you want to report?
Nah. But you didn't sue the city as you could have.
I know. It wasn't worth it. The city's already in debt enough.
Oh, how sweet of you. The police need more money to give tickets to people for other real crimes, like sitting down, right?
Well, the whole thing is that I'd be stealing the money from people like you and I if I sued the city.
Or maybe
they just pay me with your money.
Or a city manager's pension fund or something, you know.
No, they'd get that still. We get your money, and I'd end up with your money, and you don't want that.
Always looking after your back. Best interest. So we're here in
And that was Lather, who actually got a citation for pushing the huge pendulum sculpture in front of the Pacific Trading Company and also near Rosie McCann's. You may have seen it as you walk down Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz. It moves. It goes from side to side. It looks like it's meant to be pushed. It looks like all the vegetation has been stripped from that particular planter as well. But Lather got a ticket for it. He's a homeless person. Right after a couple of yuppies did some pushing, and he took that to court, and the police backed out. And so apparently since then, there's been less. I haven't heard of any subsequent pendulum pushing tickets. So that Lather may have actually trailblazed that particular citation by using that particular, well, standing up to a bogus ticket is what it was. You have any comments there, Becky?
Well, I have a lot of comments about the sculptures downtown. And you remember February, Robert, when Ryan Coonerty suggested that the ordinances downtown needed to be tweaked, that there were so many problems that they had to make bigger forbidden zones downtown for sitting and...
Yeah, they passed a lot of laws in January about that. They expanded not the... they actually just made more items. It was illegal to be within... sitting within 14 feet or panhandling within 14 feet of a sculpture and then a number of other places, further reducing the very limited amount of space where you're allowed to sit down on the sidewalk and also allowed to spare change. And then also...
Within 10 feet.
Actually, you can play music anywhere on the sidewalk.
Not for tips.
But you can't play music. You can play music for tips anywhere on the sidewalk, provided you don't have a display device, which is the theory. What you can do is you can hold out your hand for tips, or you can have a sign... put the money in my pocket, I guess you might get away with that. But if you have an open guitar case, or if you're a political table looking, you know, you don't even have to be seeking tips. If you have a political table which is capable of holding tangible things, that's the strange wording of the display device ordinance, it makes it illegal about 75 to 80% of the sidewalk to have set up a table or set up a guitar and so forth.
But, Robert, the whole significant part of that was the insertion of the word statue as being, or sculpture, statue being now a protected item on Pacific Avenue, protected from people sitting down within 14 feet, begging for spare change, playing music for tips, or setting up a political table. Those are the four activities that are now limited by statues. Now, these statues were installed up and down the mall. They're for-profit sculptures. There's numbers there you can call. It's basically more merchandise being displayed on public property. I don't know what the arrangement is, whether the city is profiting from any of those sales or not. I really don't know. I don't really even care that much. What I'm concerned about is that suddenly these statues have more rights than the people who live here. They have more rights than our, your First Amendment right to, set up a political table and register voters. That has been stopped. Especially the penguins down on kind of a lower end of Pacific Avenue, those seem to be particularly been set there to remove the people that used to hang around in that area. And I find this an extremely insidious use of public art.
Well, it is true that when they proposed the new expansion of forbidden zones to statues, they had claimed it was only going to impact The large planter areas in front of New Leaf, in front of the Pacific Trading Company, and perhaps one further area down the way near the Cinema 9, a little bit up from the Cinema 9. Those are the areas where, although it's no longer true in two of the planter areas, you could actually sit on the lip of the planter that was about knee high. It was sort of a nice, comfortable place to sit, or waist high, maybe.
Not that comfortable.
Oh, it was less uncomfortable than, let's say, sitting on the inch-high planters around trees, which, again, they're all concrete planters. It doesn't obviously hurt the planter for you to sit there. It doesn't injure anything, but it has been illegal for a decade for that to happen, I believe, in order to give the police selective enforcement powers against those members of the public that they don't want there.
And I would very much like to hear any discussions that went through the Downtown Commission or Parks and Recreation Commission regarding the installation of those sculptures. I believe that was the redevelopment agency that...
I made a Public Records Act request for anything about the sculptures and also disappearing benches, which seems to be a problem. I've noticed benches have disappeared recently from in front of Quiznos, the two benches in the corner of Cathcart and Pacific, which I mentioned before on this show. And there's also been other benches that have disappeared.
So what did
recently.
You hear about the sculptures, though? Anything?
Well, the problem, the only thing they released about the sculptures was a series of minutes of some arts commission that were essentially allowing them to be, you know, how should they look, where should they, what artists should make them, I guess what the cost is. There didn't seem to be a lot of information about who was going to place them. Was there any discussion of what public space was being removed? And it was essentially a non-response to the Public Records Act that I did. Although, you know, it mentions these sculptures, so I guess it's not entirely non-responsive. But mm-hmm. I wanted to know, for example, who took the benches, who's the individual in charge of removing the benches, where were decisions made, where were the communications between the public and the Downtown Redevelopment Agency or the Art Commission, whoever put the sculptures in. And that apparently there is no such email or information. And Steve Hammack, who's superintendent of the Department of Parks and Rec, doesn't know the name of the person charged with removing the benches. So perhaps we could help Steve, a little remedial education. Maybe we can, you know, I don't know, maybe we can have a fund for Steve. We could sort of start donations, remedial reading. I don't know what would be necessary.
You'd think that in these times where people are really hurting for jobs, that someone with that job would do their job better.
Well, at least the
sounds
the,
like incompetence.
The head of the department would
doesn't
know
where the benches
well,
are. Doesn't know the procedure to remove it. Doesn't know where they're stored.
I would suggest.
Doesn't know why they were removed.
I would suggest he knows.
Has no procedure.
He claims that there are no records that
no
indicate
records.
This. So maybe he's
he
been,
didn't keep any records
either. He's
been
cautious enough not to write it down, and therefore he may know it. But you know, those who
disappearing ink.
Those who know don't talk, and those who talk don't know. So you know.
There you go.
So it's a mystery that Steve Hammack and Danette Shoemaker, they're keeping their secrets, and by cracky, they're not going
to
tell us.
I bet if you go to their house, there's all benches all over the place. You could have a rock concert there with all the benches
at
Danette Shoemaker and Steve Hammack's house.
Maybe time to bench the two of them, actually. I'm going to play a little more, unless you have something more you want to comment on this.
Oh, no, I want to hear more that you have coming up.
Yeah, here we go. Well, I'm actually going to try to spotlight an interview I did yesterday right after the Huff meeting at the Sub Rosa Cafe. For those who are interested, actually, Sub Rosa again is open on Wednesday mornings. Thank you, Rico Thunder, a.k.a. Wes Modes, for opening the 703 Pacific Cafe, which serves cheap coffee, has a lot of interesting anarchist literature and anarchist books. There really are some great history books in there. I really recommend
and they put up with us.
Checking them out. And I was asked to take my tape recorder outside, but I wasn't told to do so. So I appreciated that. I wanted to respect the sensitive Rico Thunder, who was behind the counter and would prefer that I record outside.
Uh-oh.
Ah, sounds like a Christmas Santa may have arrived in the Free Radio studio. It looks like
Sorry.
It's just a questionable cell phone that you've brought in here. I'm going to call Marilyn Garrett on you, big girl.
Sorry about that.
All right, so you're tuned again to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. In the studio with me is Becky Johnson. This is a show about civil rights and actually the disappearance of civil rights and even the attempt to restore and reclaim civil rights in Santa Cruz for those who are poor and homeless. So
Here's some more dialogue from the streets.
Land, actually, it's Soquel and Pacific talking with
Jasmine.
And Jasmine, you and your questionable associates here are lingering on the corner, munching ice cream and I don't know what else. I guess it's around 7. Are we at 7 yet? 7:15 on Wednesday evening. What's the ticket story?
Oh, I sat down to sell my wares, not aware of the city ordinance of not being able to have a sign out with prices on them. And
there's no city ordinance to that effect. Who gave you a ticket for that?
Mr. Winston.
And he told you specifically what?
He told me that I could not have a sign with prices on it and then wrote me a ticket instead of asking me to put my sign over or giving me a warning.
And did you advise him that you had not been warned?
I told him repeatedly, and I apologized.
And his response was?
To ignore what I was saying and hand me a ticket to sign.
Did he say anything as he gave you the ticket?
No.
How long ago was this incident?
24 hours ago. It was yesterday.
And what was your reaction to Officer Winston's ticket?
I signed it and was respectful and put the ticket in my pocket, along with the other one that I have for setting my backpack down on the ground for less than a minute to adjust my other bag. He gave me a ticket for obstructing the sidewalk, even though I was in an alcove after the business had closed.
The same officer?
Yes, Officer Winston.
And how long ago was that citation?
4 days ago.
Which alcove? Where?
Right here in front of New Leaf.
And did you get warned there?
No, I did not get a warning. He was very aggressive. He raised his voice, and I told him that it was not a very intelligent or necessary decision to yell at a 135-pound girl alone at night who takes care of children all day.
To which he responded?
Nothing at all.
Did he cease his yelling?
Yes, he did. A woman walked by him. It was really funny. A citizen walked by him, patted him on the shoulder, and said, "Don't you have anything better to do?" and continued walking.
The officer battered out, the individual battered Officer Winston by touching the officer and then continued on without any kind of incident?
Yes, exactly.
This is shocking. This is the kind of crime that goes on downtown in Santa Cruz. Now, what kind of items were you displaying that upset Officer Winston?
There is an 80-year-old woman named Thunder Woman who had done some hand-drawn paintings of women, powerful images of women, on recycled paper with soy-based ink that she gave to me to sell, and some sage wraps as well.
Now, paintings, according to Robin, who is a local artist, who referred to the Reno court decision, which came out in federal court earlier this year, fine art is free speech that is protected if it's your fine art, not somebody else's. However, utilitarian arts, such as bongs or even stuff you make with your hands that is not simply for communicative purposes, which should be protected and which may be protected, is not protected, as I understand it, under the settlement that this guy, Robin, made with City Attorney John Barisone. And so, did you tell Winston that you were selling somebody else's artwork?
No.
Did he ask you?
No.
Well, of course, we're blowing your cover with this radio interview, which Winston may or may not actually access, but probably not. I don't think he listens to the radio. Do you want us to play this interview on the radio?
That's completely fine.
Okay, well then, if you decide to go to court on this issue, first I suggest you and any other individual that has a problem with this kind of citation, contact the illustrious HUF organization, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which can be reached at 423-HUF, 423-4833. And then we can advise you as to what to do, which is mainly, first of all, you disqualify referee, or I should say Commissioner Basket, and then you take your ticket to another court, and you call us up, and we will show you how to lose the ticket. Hopefully we want to show you how to win the ticket, but it's not necessarily in our hands, so that's the problem. But if you are interested in this, although there are many much better things to do than engage in these kinds of court absurdities, do give a call to 423-HUF, Jasmine.
Absolutely, and thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And your patience in dealing with this kind of lengthy interview is noted, not to mention your hug-worthy behavior. And there you have it. Thanks.
Thanks.
And the musicians are still strumming away downtown on Pacific Avenue in front of Borders. A couple is even walking a dog on a leash, shockingly enough.
You're jolly llamas, see you clearer. But when I can't turn it back on, I plan to flee from here in fear. For we can't make decisions for your otherworldly vision. You'd make a great addition to new graveyard position. And we're not to be, no, we are not to be, for the ghost is you and the human is me. Oh, we can never be, no, we're not to be, for the ghost is you and the human is me. Oh, we can never be, no, we can never be, for you are a ghost and I am telling you.
And it's the Jolly Llamas, jolly as ever.
Never be, for you are a ghost and I am merely meat. Oh, we can never be, no, we can never be, for you are a ghost and I am merely meat.
So we have we're not going to be able to record this. I wish you could hear this, folks, but you can't. So we are talking with
Danny.
Danny, go ahead. You got a report?
Yeah. One day I'm on the street. My glasses recently broke completely. I'm blind as a bat. I don't know. I played the blind card, and the cops came up on me. I'm sitting right here on this stoop here.
Near Borders.
Smoking. Right here at Borders, smoking a cigarette.
Smoking illegally?
Go ahead.
I played the blind card.
Yes.
I had to because I couldn't see.
Yes.
I can't see. Anything beyond my nose is very blurry.
You're nearsighted, let's face it.
Yes, I'm nearsighted. Extremely nearsighted.
But still very attractive.
Thank you. And a cop comes up. I just got woken up by a police officer under the bridge. It was already bad enough that I haven't had my coffee. I was woken up by officer. What is the guy's officer who woke us up those two times under the bridge?
It wasn't Officer Winston, by chance.
No.
Not Officer Forbes.
No.
Anyway.
The one ranger who blames everyone.
Wallace, Chief Ranger Wallace.
All the problems on the homeless.
Chief Ranger John Wallace. Right.
Yeah. Officer Wallace is a goddamn motherfucking asshole. Pardon my language, but he treats us like shit when he is the one who is treating everyone like that.
So when did this happen?
A couple days before I went to the armory.
And you've been at the armory in the last couple weeks? The
last couple days, actually.
And so what happened? What for? So you said you played the blind card, you said?
Yes, and one of the young, I don't know, I couldn't see. All I could see was their boots, because that's what was in front of me. Officer Wallace woke me up from under the bridge. I come over here, smoke my cigarette, sit down on a planter. I'm not listening. I'm totally unaware of everything around me at all. I can't see anything that's around me, but I know things are there. And
what time of day is it?
Early morning.
Okay.
They walk over. Hey, Fisher. Somebody hug you. Sorry. Pretty good. How are you? And I'm just sitting here smoking a cigarette. He comes up on me. I need to see your ID, please. I'm like, dude, don't get too close. I can't see you, but just who the fuck are you, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, police officer, please give me your ID. I'm starting to almost cuss him out because he got too close and I didn't even see him coming near me. So he kind of scared the crap out of me at that time, and so I almost cussed him out. Ooh, thank you.
No problem.
Candy. Love candy. Christmas.
You're still without your glasses, I noticed.
I'm getting a pair. They're going to call me. Costco will call me on my cell phone to get the new pair.
That's good.
This beautiful young old elderly lady who works at the soup kitchen told me just to pay it forward. She went and paid for a new pair of lenses and glasses.
That's cool.
No smoking on the
table. So what was the outcome of the smoking ticket encounter?
Warning. Gave me 4 warnings that day, and I was good for the rest of the day. There's got to be a triple.
And you're examining a cookie given to you by the infamous fisherman downtown. The fisher for small tips on Pacific Avenue.
So far I got a cookie, $7, and a ham sandwich.
And
so.
You're smoking illegally downtown, I notice.
I know.
Or somebody is. I smell smoke in the air, and I notice something in your mouth.
Well,
I could be having a fantasy, but probably not.
I think they really targeted the homeless on that. for the no smoking, but it's really a reason, another excuse for the city to raise money.
Come over here for a minute. So this property is attended. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's really another excuse for the city to raise money.
Shaw, do you have a cigarette? I will buy that for me right now.
I think you're probably right, fisherman.
You can't put that kind of stuff on the radio.
Why not?
Talks like a fisherman.
For certainly.
So it's almost as bad as like what a sailor talks like.
This is, of course, the poet walking by.
Don't say that.
Uncle Dennis. We know him. We love him. We hate him.
$10.
So we got an anonymous report from the Armory that there was some controversy up there, and the Armory didn't like the idea of Yellow Bee Brown recording and videoing or taking pictures of, I don't know, a situation that occurred where he felt he was wronged by some of the personnel. And this actually so struck the two people who were telling me about it that they didn't want to actually say anything because they feared that they themselves were prohibited from saying anything, which, in fact, isn't really the case. You have two complaints, fisherman?
Yes. One, you can check it out yourself. Go up one night. The head honcho, Jeff, he's very belligerent. Says F you, all that. And the second is the blankets, because I already caught crabs and lice.
You mentioned that, but there's a problem with the blankets at the Armory.
Yeah. And that's the only
insufficiently washed is what you were telling me.
Yeah, because a lot of people have diseases, and you don't know. I mean, you can have the blankets from somebody that had AIDS the last night. You know what I mean? Or flu, or you know.
Crabs.
Yeah, crabs, body lice.
Well, no hugging the fishermen. Keep that in mind.
Oh, I got rid of the itchy scratchies. Thank God.
All right. Well, thank goodness. Just
I had to,
watch out.
You
had
are very handle cool. Don't just mean you have to. You're
So that was Wednesday night, and now it's Thursday, and I'm on my way to have a bite to eat. But I ran into Max again, the same Max you just heard on the tape, and he reported on the banks of the San Lorenzo, or actually a bit up from it, San Lorenzo Park.
Actually, the Max that was reporting was Danny's partner. That was the two that were awoken by Officer or Chief Ranger John Wallace, and then Danny later got harassed at the on Pacific Avenue for sitting on a planter and smoking. Max is that's the Max.
He was busted for camping. Three police officers accosted him, told him that the area had been closed for years. Yeah, then they amended their statement and said, no, only for a more limited period of time, but there's no camping anywhere in Santa Cruz. We can't tell you where to go. We've had no complaint, but we're not going to give you a warning. So he got a ticket, but the others in his camp, a guy and his girlfriend, were able to successfully elude that unfortunate legal process. So that's the latest from San Lorenzo Park on Thursday, the 17th of December, and it's about 20 to 11.
And let's pause here. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. In the studio with me is Becky Johnson, feverishly preparing her report on the homeless homeless memorial, the homeless death. She's been not only been out to the homeless memorial on the 22nd, she's been downtown with signs denouncing the number of deaths, 58, although I guess the sign said only 47 because that was the official number, right?
Yes, 47 officially. And then they read, they included some extra names of formerly homeless people who had died recently but were housed at the time. And that brought the number up to 55. And then a woman came in with three more names, so that would bring it to 58. An unofficial death toll of 58.
This was actually at the Homeless Service Center where they were having a memorial there.
Yeah, at the memorial, this woman came in and named with three more names.
Uh-huh. Well, I see you brought some reports with you, both from this year and, I guess, previous years. I guess the first thing you mentioned the thing I noticed when we went down to do this sing-along, sip-along protest in front of the bookshop was that the reported number last year of homeless deaths was 20, and this year was 47, which was amended to 58.
And that's almost a threefold increase.
235% increase in homeless deaths in 1 year, and yet it wasn't considered particularly newsworthy by the Sentinel, at least. They certainly didn't feature it as a front page headline. Record homeless deaths in Santa Cruz. We had more homeless deaths in Santa Cruz County than the city of Las Vegas had. And that's at least three times bigger than Santa Cruz County.
Well, it should be said, and that was Santa Cruz County deaths, not Santa Cruz City deaths. But still, I thought that the 20 last year was a big undercount. You know, but I don't, because the previous year it was, what, 35 or 40, something like
35
that?
35 the year before.
In 2007, I guess it was. 2008 it was 20, in 2009 it was 58 or 47, upgraded or corrected to 58.
Well, even this count is undoubtedly an undercount, because there's just no system that's going to catch every death that's homeless-related. However, this was a huge jump from last year. I tend to believe the number last year, and the reason I do is because the city and county, especially the county, have done major work in the last 6 years to build supportive housing units for the chronically homeless people, the people who are hardest to place into housing. And those very, very expensive units, there are 350 units that have been built. And I thought that, along with the fact that so many people have died, that there just were less people out there to die, that those two factors, so I tended to believe the 20 count. Also, the proportion of people that died from drug and alcohol use is virtually the same in last year's total versus this year's total.
And what proportion is
that? It's about a quarter. This year it was 27% of the deaths.
And you mentioned to me during, not during the break, but you mentioned to me earlier that the Genevieve Bookwalter's Santa Cruz County's Homeless Dead Honored story in the 23rd, yesterday's paper.
Mm-hmm. I have some huge problems.
Specifically, it undercounts, it exaggerates the number of alcohol and drug-related deaths. Is that right?
She reported that 29 of the 47 died from drug and alcohol-related deaths.
But you have the report here.
I have it in front of me, and the number is clearly 13.
So it's a much smaller number.
Considerably smaller.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe Genevieve was drinking at the time, and probably not, no. I know that...
You have to go all the way to the fourth paragraph before you even learn that this was the record number of homeless deaths.
Fourth paragraph of the Sentinel story.
Of Genevieve Bookwalter's story.
I don't think they want to emphasize that Santa Cruz is bumping off its homeless at an unusual clip.
And then what is the title of that article?
Santa Cruz County's Homeless Dead Honored is the title, according to the online edition.
Yeah, Santa Cruz County Homeless Dead Honored. How nice.
You know, actually, this interview which I'm about...
What a compassionate county we are, that we honor our homeless death every year.
Well, this is an interesting interview.
It's not...
It's interview coming up here. Let me interrupt you before you begin another sentence. And that is that we have an actual homeless person, unlike the two of us, who has some rather sharp things to say about this whole homeless memorial business. I ran into her, and she's anonymous, although she told me her name, so there, I get to know, and nobody else does, at the Sub Rosa Cafe where we were having our meeting yesterday, our Huff meeting, and she... as soon as you're finished with your report, Becky, mm-hmm. I'm gonna play this, and you can, of course, comment on it and on her commentary as well. But I know that you've assembled a mass of documents here, which
not that
why don't
many.
You go ahead and comment on what you've
no,
got.
No, I know. Those were, that it should have been front page news of the Sentinel. Record homeless deaths in Santa Cruz County. We had 31 deaths in the city alone. That's
and how many massive. How many deaths in the city last year?
Okay, I got that. It doesn't say, just as location. Yeah, we had, it wasn't broken down that way last year.
Hmm.
It just says location at time of death, outside vehicle 8, hospital 8, nursing facility hospice 3, temporary residence friend's home 1. So that's all they say about the location.
Or perhaps you should get in touch with Letitia Schwartz, the Homeless Service Center director. I know that you, I did interview you about this issue, and I think we're going to be playing it, if not today, then on Sunday. I have a longer version of the show on Sunday for those of you who just tuned in or don't know. It's every Sunday morning, 9:30 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I will try to catch up on some of these interviews because I don't.
Well, you cannot make the statement
that
Santa Cruz, the city of Santa Cruz, has so many services for homeless people. We just have all these handouts. They're just living a life of Riley here because we have such cushy social services. You can't make that statement and show 47 homeless deaths in 1 year or 31 within the city limits alone. You just simply can't make that statement. Something about our homeless policy is really horribly wrong. If that many people are dying in 1 year.
Well, as a devil's advocate, I would have to say, although these kinds of arguments, I don't know if I credit them much, but you probably read them perpetually and repeatedly on the Sentinel website. These are homeless people who are alcoholics, drunks, skunks, and punks who, they're a more violent population. They're a population of people who are abusive of themselves, who seem to be indifferent to their own safety, and frankly, it's a pity, of course, but, people have got to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps.
There's this kind of right-wing think tank idea that homeless people are on the streets because they made some terrible life decision or choice at some point, and it's a personal responsibility issue that they, maybe they dropped out of high school or that they didn't take the job they should have.
They must have been on drugs.
Or they chose to take drugs or alcohol when they really should have stayed sober.
They didn't get the kind of mental health treatment they needed, and they got off their meds.
That's another one.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really find that to be the case.
Well, you certainly find a large percentage of people on the street who are visibly, who seem to be more aggressive, or they seem to be sometimes acting more bizarrely, or you find alcoholics on the street. Now, it's hard to say because a lot of homeless people are hidden in the sense that they try not to appear homeless. They want to be stereotyped as homeless, skunks, punks, and drunks.
So the average person who's looking around to see who's homeless and not might not notice a lot of the homeless people around them because they seem well-dressed, they seem clean, and they don't smell. They seem like they have business they're doing. They're not panhandling. They're not squeegeeing windows.
And these aren't the people that the story that appeared the day before the Homeless Service Center Homeless Memorial story appeared that the leaders are concerned about. And that story is titled, Santa Cruz Leaders Grow Increasingly Frustrated.
Oh, that's about the DIY parade.
Actually, I was looking for another story, which I'm having trouble finding.
There's that Sentinel editorial.
Well, it's not the editorial. It's the front page story with Councilmember Coonerty describing compassion fatigue or compassion shock. I like to call him compassion-free Coonerty. It's kind of a nice new moniker.
Yeah, something about misplaced compassion and that they're...
Don Lane
undoing,
as a similar, or Gon
you know,
Lane,
all the wonderful work that we're, that real, you know, the professionals are doing to steer homeless people into social programs is being undone by Ronnie and her beanies. That if she gives them a beanie and gives them a sandwich, well,
I better describe what you're talking about. Although
all the social services are for naught.
We did play Ronnie at the beginning of the show, but that's of course the woman who gives out food, and you can donate to her cause. She's available to get in touch with her. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I'll give you more information about how to donate money to Ronnie. That's her name.
Yeah, she needs yarns and crochet noodles, needles.
Clothing, you name it.
To make more beanies. Got to have those yarns. Yeah, get some good ones, like wools. Wool yarn stays warm even if it's wet. So you could save someone's life with a wool beanie. You really could.
Oh. Well, I'm trying to locate this story on the Coonerty, Compassion Free Coonerty.
Compassion Free Coonerty.
I'm calling him here. Downtown Santa Cruz Homeless Ministry raises
ire. Are you on a mic there?
I hope so.
Try again.
Of city limits. Of city leaders. And it's another one of those front page anti-homeless, as I view it, Sentinel stories. And let's take a look at it here.
Yeah, the Sentinel seems to be very in league with merchants who are anti-homeless. They can't run interference for them all the time.
This is a story with 219 comments on the Sentinel website. And again, the quote
only
is,
50 of them are mine.
Oh, dear. Yes, you're quite a prolific commentator.
A little too prolific.
The story reads, a youth minister, a handful of local churches, and a former homeless woman are clashing with city leaders over the best way to address Santa Cruz's longtime street problems. Actually, that's a really sensationalistic way of putting it. I think I would like to see them clashing with the city leaders, but I think that they're simply giving out food once a week.
They're
and
doing
clothing.
It in the wrong place.
You know, it's
that's
not. You know,
clash.
It's interesting. They're not engaging in political protests against businesses as Huff was this winter or summer, I should say. They're not marching in the parade as Huff did on December 5th and singing Christmas carols that mock police abuse of homeless people, like we did with Sergeant Harms is coming to town. These people are giving out food and clothing once a week, or maybe twice, if you talk about the Sunday food and clothing giveaway in front of Borders, and that's Sunday afternoon. Go down there and check it out. Or the Monday evening giveaway at the Red Church, and that's at the Youth Cafe. And maybe also Wednesday, I'm sorry. Let's call it three times a week. They come to the Farmer's Market Drum Circle as well. So they're just a little charity group. And usually I don't have a lot of passionate support for charity groups. I mean, they're nice. I'm glad people are compassionate. But to me, you know, you give people charity and then Chief Ranger Wallace runs and steals all their stuff anyway. You know, so what's the fucking point? I mean, it is a good idea to do. I mean, why not? Sure. Particularly as the weather gets colder. But it's not something that...
I get your point.
My point is that they're not clashing with the city leaders. And to describe it this way is an example of Genevieve Bookwalter's taking a particular slant for the Sentinel, which... it's kind of like a similar slanderous slant she took with the Homeless Service Center director, Doug Loisel. I mean... And also, she approached Rene. I talked to Rene about the interview she had with Genevieve Bookwalter in a sympathetic way, trying to kind of understand what was going on. And this is essentially an assault and an attempt to create a confrontation. It's
a
like
smear job.
It's like calling
from our Sentinel.
It's like calling Rotkin and saying, you know, hey, there's this parade happening on December 31st, and they haven't got permits. What do you think of that? And if he were smart, Rotkin would have hung up. But instead, he says, "Oh, well, I think the police will look the other way, but I think they should have permits because they're freeloaders." You know, she's creating the Sentinel from a right-wing perspective is creating this kind of stuff, I think, and
kind
particularly
of
Genevieve
gotcha
Bookwalter.
Gotcha journalism.
Well, it's not even gotcha. It's she's cooking up scenarios, and she's really sort of, you know, creating something that isn't really there. I wish, as I said, that these church leaders or these church folks were confronting. I mean, all they're doing is they're just trying to be charitable. Big deal.
Well, I get your point. If you're handing out blankets to homeless people and then the cops are seizing them at 11 p.m. for being an illegal use of the blanket, that church leader needs to speak out about that, what the cops are doing.
Well, I haven't heard, frankly, of anybody's blankets being seized at 11 p.m. I have heard of a number of campsites being destroyed and property being vandalized by the cleanup crews sent by Chief Ranger Wallace, and I have heard of property being seized by the police department. You know, I know that you often speak of this, and you actually talked on KGO briefly, the AM radio station this morning about this. And
my 15 minutes of fame blown.
I've actually got that on tape. I don't know if we're going to get to it. Hopefully we will. But the blanket ban itself is rarely used against homeless people these days. It is a law that makes it illegal to cover up with bedding after 11 o'clock at night. But the sleeping ban is, and that
they
is
seem to favor Section A, sleeping,
that's the
between
sleeping
11
so
p.m. and
used.
8:30 a.m.
Right. So I say that because I don't want, you know, when you're making commentary, I want to make sure that you are not overemphasizing things that are rarely enforced. I think I'm more concerned with ordinances that are regularly enforced, so I'm pointing that out.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, aren't you
got speechless
picky
eh, Becky?
There.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm about to, well, let me continue with, you got some, if you have more discussion of the homeless memorial, that's good. Again, we will be playing your...
I tried
to
talk to Tony Madrigal, uh-huh, who was the only
city... He's a council member.
He is the only city council member who was at the memorial who didn't have to be there. I say that because Catherine Byers was there and Don Lane were both there. But since both of them are on the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center, they were kind of duty-bound to be there. I also thought Mayor Mike Rotkin should have been there. He was absent, and there was no explanation given as to why he wasn't there. So I was a little surprised to see Tony Madrigal there. I've never seen him at one of these memorials before. And, you know, I went up and talked to him a little bit and thanked him for coming. And so when I said to him, well, Tony, 47 deaths, and they read 55 names. It's clear now our homeless policy isn't working. And he just kind of dazed out and zoned off and walked away. No response.
Well, perhaps Tony was, who knows what Tony was up to. At least he didn't accuse you of ambush journalism as he did me the last time we spoke. What can I say? So, I'm going to now ask you if you got more to say on this homeless memorial report.
Well, I did have a little chat with Letitia Schwartz and Roland Rebley and told them some of our concerns that the family homeless shelter has not been full. And they told me of a problem they had that
Letitia
I was unaware
Schwartz
of.
Letitia Schwartz is, of course, the Homeless Service Center director, and Roland Rebley is a philanthropist, and the guy whose name is on the big family shelter at the corner of River and Coral Street.
Yeah, Roland Rebley provided the most of the funding, or a significant percentage of the funding for the family homeless shelter, and he remains very active on the board of directors.
Uh-huh.
He said that they have very strict staffing per client ratios to keep, and they've had so many funding cuts and so many rounds of funding that they can't even fill the family shelter because they don't have enough staff to legally operate it at maximum right now. They have been able to fill it at least twice. It's been full twice since it opened, but that's...
The capacity is what, 29 families?
It's 28 families, and it's not an exact amount because, you know, families can be large or small. And but it's set up to have 28 different sort of living areas for families.
Okay. Anything else that you want to bring to our attention before we roll into this interview with the anonymous observer up at the homeless, I guess the armory is what she's going to be mainly talking about.
Well, 4 suicides. And 4 deaths from being run over by vehicles. That's unusual. I haven't heard of that before at all, of a homeless person being run over by a car. But 4 people died this year from that. And then 4 suicides. And then a murder. I think there were 10 deaths from trauma and a fall. That was it. A murder and a fall. So...
Well, I know the only people I recognize who have died this year is, I guess, Doug McGrath.
Yeah, Doug McGrath wasn't on the list either. Possibly he was one of the homeless.
Formerly homeless.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, I think he lived in the vehicle way off in the boonies, but he was in Santa Cruz County, and he was Marilyn Weaver's partner. She was on the Homeless Issues Task Force. He was also the guy who was part of the protest, the One Dance Summit protest mm-hmm. that we held 5 years ago, where a bunch of people came down from this church where political groups were meeting to protest the anti-homeless policies mm-hmm. of then-Mayor Kennedy and Vice-Mayor Rotkin, and I was arrested for whispering to him.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was arrested for allegedly disrupting a meeting because Kennedy thought that walking around the room silently with the sign and whispering to him and then asking, what are you doing, constituted a disruption that meant I had to be banned from the area.
Three warnings equal a disruption.
And I refused to go, and I said, no, I mean, I left, and I came back. I want to be a part of the meeting. And anyway, so McGrath was involved in that, and there was actually a very full obituary that appeared in the Sentinel about him with his picture, which people can check out, I think, or I hope, online. I wasn't able originally to find it, but I did spot it in the actual print version of the paper. So,
yeah, Doug, a lot of people remember Doug McGrath and Marilyn Weaver, his partner.
Right. Well, I'm going to take a brief musical break, I think, here, and then we will return to this thrilling show.
Christmas Eve show. Maybe we should do a Christmas carol.
Oh, dear. Yeah, Sergeant Harms is coming to town. I don't know if we want to risk that.
It would be nice without having a megaphone screaming in my face. I think it would be an improvement.
Well, I don't know. We heard you the other day, and there were some questions. But
I think I could do better now.
Yeah, good. So I hope so. But let's hear a little from a more professional singer who isn't singing about Christmas, but nonetheless.
Tell you the story about the time that I knew that you were the one for me and I was for you. As the stars in your eyes seemed to melt into mine, we were talking revolution and drinking red wine. Some girls like perfume, and others will melt at the sight of a diamond ring. Well, they don't mean a thing to me, they never cross my mind. It's talking revolution and drinking red wine. Hollywood love stories. Well, they don't do a thing for me at all. Oh, not the key to my heart. You've held all this time. It's talking revolution and drinking red wine.
It's around, 1 o'clock. A little after 1 o'clock here at the Sub Rosa on Wednesday, the 23rd of December. The sun is out. The cold is being burnt away, and I'm talking with.
I'd prefer to remain anonymous.
An anonymous person who is houseless or homeless or outdoors.
Yes.
And you've been in Santa Cruz, you were telling me, about a year.
I've been homeless in Santa Cruz for about a year and a half.
And you've sat in on this recent HUF meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which meets every Wednesday, 10:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe. When it's open, which it actually was today, amazingly enough. And you kind of listened in on the meeting, and you had some thoughts and expressed yourself. First of all, what did you think of our meeting?
It was actually a lot of fun. And I felt like I was able to express some frustrations about ongoing issues I have with being homeless in Santa Cruz that I haven't been able to express before. So it was invigorating.
And what are those issues, anonymous one?
Well, I think the issue specifically that you asked to interview me about was regarding the homeless memorial that the homeless shelter services provide.
Yesterday.
Yeah, it was put on yesterday by the homeless shelter services staff. And as they're putting up the flags themselves, so basically what the memorial looks like is there's a series of flags with the names of people who've died, the year that they died, and the age that they were when they died. And then in parentheses will be the person's, I guess, street name or the name that they were known by.
Let me ask you, are these everybody in the last 10 years or just everybody for the last year?
So everyone in the last 10 years, from 1999 to 2009.
Wow.
So, and as a homeless person, I found the memorial insulting to the extreme, especially because not only are names of people who have died being put up without their permission, the permission of their friends or the permission of their families, which to me looks like appropriation, it was also put up 2-3 days before Christmas. And to be homeless at Christmas is already a depressing state. You walk into the homeless shelter services dining hall, and there's a Christmas tree and all this Christmas decoration, and so basically we were being reminded constantly that Christmas is there for everyone but us, because there isn't going to be a Christmas celebration for us at homeless shelter services. There's not going to be a special meal there for us. As a matter of fact, it's going to be closed on Christmas, so the place that we usually go for breakfast and dinner will be closed. But then 2 days before Christmas, we're all going to be reminded of all of the people that we have lost in the last year that were members of our community. And then when we eat our breakfast, their names, the people we lost just that year, will be up on the wall for us to look at while we're trying to eat our breakfast, which is disgusting. You know, it brings up feelings of grief and loss for people who are in some way related to the people who've gone. And then even for people who aren't necessarily related to members of this community, if they're transient, if they're here, they haven't known people that long, you can't help but see yourself up there. So 2 to 3 days before you don't get Christmas and everybody else does, you get to be reminded that your death sentence is very likely in the near future because you're homeless. And then we should just go on about our days and not have any sort of emotional reaction. And then the staff members, like Leticia, I don't remember her last name.
Schwartz.
Who's the executive director, who I've actually only seen 3 different times, will get up there and give a really long speech about these poor, unfortunate homeless people who have died. And she doesn't really even know any of them. Because if she knew any of them, I would know her. Because I know everybody there.
You've been there for how long?
3.5 years. And the 2 people who work on a day-to-day basis with us, at the ground support staff, I didn't even see them at the memorial, the picture that they had. And the picture of the people sitting there, I recognized 2 of them. So there were 2 recognizable faces at the memorial. And I know these people very well because I eat with them every day, I shower with them, and I sleep with them at night. There were 2 recognizable faces, which indicates to me that this memorial is not for the homeless people, but it's really like a PR and publicity stunt by the staff at the homeless shelter services. And what's really sad is this could be a political statement. If they wanted to hang these names up on Pacific Avenue, like requiring the people in Santa Cruz who aren't providing adequate resources to us of the death sentence that is likely for people who are homeless, that would be one thing. But to force us to look at our dead friends on a flag while we're trying to eat, the sad fact is it won't be memorial services for most people who die who are homeless because they don't have money for a memorial service. But, you know, it would be really empowering if, like, on a monthly basis, we were empowered to, like, have these memorials ourselves. We were given some candles, the names of the people who died that month. Or, you know, if they did this in June, when it's sunny and warm outside and we can process these grieving emotions and these emotions of loss at a time of year when we're not already reminded of how much we don't have that everyone else does. So I found the whole situation distasteful and disregarding to our emotional states. And when you also consider that so many, like, homeless people already have, like, severe psychological and emotional, like, dysfunction to begin with, to, like, remind them of their dead friends so close to the holidays is just, like, abhorrent to me. So thank you for, do you have any other questions?
Of course. You've only begun to ask questions. Okay. You've been around for a year, and you say you've also been reading, well, many of us read the article in, I guess it was yesterday's Sentinel, regarding how some, including council member and former mayor Ryan Coonerty, a constitutional lawyer, I might add, or so he says, is concerned that Ron A. of the Red Church's giveaway of food, burritos, and beanies, which he does every Sunday, is a form of inappropriate empowerment. I'm not quoting him exactly, but that's sort of the gist of what he says. You had a rather strong reaction to that during the meeting.
Right. What I remember him insinuating was that these giveaways aren't necessary because Santa Cruz is already appropriately meeting the needs of the homeless, and that it's better that we're directed towards the resources that are already being provided to us to lift us up out of our homeless state, which is bullshit. And, you know, I have a degree in psychology, and I do understand that, like, getting people addicted to handouts isn't the best way to deal with the homeless situation. But the problem is that the homeless situation isn't adequately being addressed. Our needs aren't being met, and people in this community are trying to, like, make up for that in any way that they can. And rather than, like, functionally reaching out to these charity groups and trying to work with them in a cohesive manner, he, like, insults them. I kind of, from a political stance, I couldn't think of, like, a more distasteful way to treat your constituency than to, like, insult people who are trying to make up for the losses that you as a city council are creating for not just the homeless people, but obviously these church members must see a severe lack of resources for us, or they wouldn't feel the need to be meeting them themselves.
Well, maybe, according to, if you go on the Sentinel website to look at articles, comments after that story that showed up, and people can go to the Sentinel website and find a whole bunch of usually bigoted comments by a sort of a small crew of regular posters who do that. There's also actually a lot of defense of the people who are giving out charity. I mean, traditional feelings that it's Christmas, for God's sake, you know, come on. I mean, you know, the implication being that, you know, you can kick around the homeless at other times, but at Christmas it's kind of bad taste. You know, you don't want to do that too publicly. And so what's this, you know, it looks in a way like Councilmember Coonerty is maybe trying to lead this new group, Take Back Santa Cruz, which is showing up to drive away the ragamuffins and ne'er-do-wells and, well, people of your ilk, anonymous one.
I don't know about that so much. I didn't read any of the responses myself. But what I do know is that there are actually already resources available in Santa Cruz that aren't being put to their full use that could be used to provide adequate or better, maybe not adequate, but better resources for homeless people. Like I think if the city council or Ryan Coonerty actually had any, I don't know, driving desire to actually meet the needs of homeless people in this community.
Political will.
Any kind of, basically to do anything but to insult us further and to make our lives more difficult than they already are, he would be reaching out to the churches and asking them if they had any kind of day programs that we could be involved in, even just a place to go and sit to get out of the rain and the cold, because currently the only place we have to go during the day is Pacific Avenue, which we already know that the shop owners really, really don't like, but unfortunately the city isn't providing us any other option. I mean, they could be also utilizing city resources like empty school gymnasiums when school is out. Anywhere for us to go during the day when it's raining or cold, or, you know, even if it's not raining and cold, just to get us off the goddamn avenue. What frustrates me is that there are already empty buildings where human beings who have absolutely no other place to just keep their bodies and their stuff for a few hours could be made available to us. If people wanted to put forth the resources to find positive solutions instead of just insulting each other.
Well, you should know that the reason that the Homeless Service Center, originally the Homeless Community Resource Center, before that, a free meal, it was called, was created, was because the merchants specifically did want to get people away from the downtown, mm-hmm. because we were doing sleep-ins, sit-ins, and protests there, demanding an end to, among other things, the sleeping ban, also mm-hmm. the feeding ban, and discrimination and police abuse of homeless people. That was back in 1988 and 89.
Right.
What's your reaction to that?
I think that there needs to be less... less retaliation against homeless people by less retaliation by the shop owners against homeless people, and more retaliation against city government for really not meeting even just the basic needs of homeless people in this community. So, I mean, I have compassion for local business owners who are just trying to stay in business and bring shoppers in, and not and to not be attacked by people who can't afford to even buy themselves a sandwich. And some of these people are going to go buy beer and things like that. But, you know, I actually think a lot of the alcoholism around here would, like, decrease if there was shelter and entertainment during the daytime. Like, if there was some place for...
Bread and circuses, is that what you're proposing, anonymous one?
I'm proposing, like, if school is out and a gymnasium is open, why can't you let a bunch of homeless people go in there and watch a movie and eat some soup? I think that would, like, decrease significantly the number of people that you have on the streets.
But that only would lure more people from cities all over the world to come to Santa Cruz to watch the free movies and eat the soup.
You know what that would provide? It would provide an opportunity to, like... get a lot of homeless people, because the homeless problem is pervasive across the country. And if you actually localized the homeless people in a few different cities and adequately supported their needs, you would eradicate the situation. You would like eradicate homelessness from the country. And I think that if there were a few responsible cities across the nation who decided to take that on, like, we are responsible people, and we think that homelessness needs to be eradicated from the United States of America, it could be done. So I don't argue that, like, the homeless network wouldn't be out there and be like, hey, Santa Cruz has this resource available for people. Or what else could happen is we could start doing this, it could be publicized, and then cities all over the country could start, like, you know, more properly addressing the inadequate day support that exists. I mean, currently they do have some places for people to sleep at night, but I mean, even if you go into San Francisco, what they do is they give you a place to sleep from 5 until 5 in the morning, and they kick your ass out before any other resources are open. People have nowhere to go. It's freezing ass cold outside. The sun hasn't even come up yet. And then, you know, by the time the shops open, these people have already been squatting in front of your store for 3 hours, and there's piss on the ground because there's no public bathrooms. And that's our fault.
Of course it is. Why don't you move on? And are you homeless by choice?
No, I'm too sick to work. I have a BA in psychology. I've worked since I was 16 years old. And, you know, I could file for unemployment, but I'd have to be actively looking for work. And if you're like me, there are absolutely no public resources available. If you're like me, you just happen to be too sick, and you know you're in foster care, and you don't have like appropriate family to take care of you, and you end up in a situation like this. GAs are like $170 a month. Like that's cash money. That's
$200.
Yeah, that's like, I get food stamps, but in order to qualify for GAs, I'd have to go through a work training program. Well, I already put my ass through college. I still have student loans I have to repay. I've been paying taxes since I was 16 fucking years old. And you know what? If I could work, if I could go to your goddamn work training program, then I could get a good goddamn job. I don't have the energy or the physical resources to get up every fucking day, get on the goddamn bus, and go sit through a class that I could be teaching if I was feeling well enough for it. So fuck you.
So what is your disability, you foul-mouthed anonymous individual?
I have, like, I have migraines, which sounds like, ooh, poor girl, she has a headache, but, like, I can't read.
Well, you're a pothead as well.
No, I don't smoke weed.
Doesn't help the migraines?
No, it makes them worse. Like, and sometimes I'm so, like, in much pain and, like, dizzy from the migraines that I can barely walk. And I can read. I've been reading for, I love to read. It's part of the reason I went to college, but some days I can't.
Audiobooks, perhaps?
You know, just focusing and concentrating on anything is sometimes difficult when, like, everything around you is kind of spinning and dizzy and, like, you have pain in your head. So it sounds like migraines aren't that big of a deal, and I wish that they weren't such a big deal. And I've worked most of my life, so not working is already...
What kind of work?
My last job, I was in sales. I made $60,000 a year.
Santa Cruz?
I was living in Oakland, and I was commuting an hour and a half to Redwood City every day. And then my health started failing, lost my job, and yeah. And I could have applied for, I could have done this again and applied for unemployment and looked for another job while I was sick. And I had done it two or three times, and I was so exhausted and tired, so I lost my housing, and here I am. And what's, like, really disappointing for me is, like, I already know the social systems here aren't adequate to support people, but, like, GAs are $187 a month, and they're a loan. Like, I'd have to pay them back. Because the money I already paid the federal government in my taxes, that doesn't mean anything to anybody. So I'd have to pay those back. And so I don't have an income except for food stamps, because I'm actually too proud to beg. And I was singing on the avenue for a little while.
Not these evil anti Downtown Association chanties, I hope, that Huff has been encouraging people crashing their parades and doing all kinds of nonsensical and counterproductive behavior.
No, I haven't been one of those.
I hope not.
I'm a musician, and I have always supported myself, so I was supporting myself with my music. And my car broke down and got towed, and I can't actually carry my guitar that far. It's too heavy for me, and, like, it causes tension in my back, which increases the likelihood of headaches, migraine, blah, blah, blah. And really, I was only singing to put gas in my car, so now that the car's gone, I don't really have to worry about that as much. But, yeah, so my only source of income is gone except for the food stamps. So my frustration is that even if you do everything right, because often the case against homeless people is, well, they just fucked up. They shouldn't have drank so much, or, you know, you used too many drugs, or you didn't finish high school. That's your fault. Even if you did everything right, there's still nothing for you if you're too sick to work. If you're not producing and consuming in this country, you have no value to anyone.
So, in your own way, though, you've sought out other avenues, such as the infamous Sub Rosa Cafe, where I found you lounging on a, sleeping, one might even suggest, trying to catch a few winks. And you're using the armory at night, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How is the armory program?
The armory program was a lot better than I thought it would be, especially after staying at the loft at the homeless shelter services.
The Paul Lee loft.
Yeah, the Paul Lee loft, which when it opened didn't even have a microwave for homeless people, which, like, you have, like, unless you're homeless, you really don't understand what it's like to like, not have a refrigerator, okay? You can't store food. So that means every time you use your food stamps, you have to buy stuff that you can eat right away. And you can't even, if there's no microwave, you can't even heat up your food. So basically what you can eat are, like, Lunchables and pre-made sandwiches. You know, or you can buy a bunch of, if you don't mind your bread getting all fucked up in your sack, you know, in your backpack, then you can buy some bread and some peanut butter, and you can live like that. And it's inhumane. And, yeah, but the armory actually has, and I was surprised it had a microwave, they have hot water there. You know, you can use toilet paper there, and they don't have to dole it out to you beforehand like they do at the Poly Loft. Like, they actually trust people with toilet paper there, which I just thought was astounding. The thing about the armory, though, is, you know, we're kicked out at, we have to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then we're kicked out at 6. They do transport us, but where do you go at 6 o'clock in the morning? You go to the streets, and it's freezing cold, and the sun isn't even up yet.
What about Denny's? I understand they have a fine breakfast deal.
Well, that's so great if you have an income. You know, I don't even have $2 for coffee. Like, the solution that some people who have any sort of income have is to buy themselves a coffee and then to just sit inside of a coffee house for as long as they can get away with.
There are two fine institutions in Santa Cruz, at least Denny's and the Santa Cruz Diner.
But if you don't have an income, then you don't have any. What I've been relying on are public resources like the library, which is closed the entire week of Christmas, and on Fridays. And then Sabrosa, which is volunteered by staff. By volunteer staff is often not open. The Loudon Nelson Center is a park where I can hang out outside, but then the bathrooms are frequently closed. And, you know, because I'm on foot, going far from the downtown area or River Street is really difficult for me because, A, I have physical limitations because of the migraines, and then, B, I have so much stuff to carry with me everywhere. So, you know, even if I'm feeling okay with the migraines, like I have my backpack and all my sleeping gear that I have to take with me every day because I don't have $13 a month to pay for a locker at River Street. And even if I had one, they're mostly full. So it's just like, where are the resources, Ryan Coonerty? Because I don't see them anywhere. And I don't think, you know, it's politically savvy of anyone to recommend that charity services that are being made available to homeless people to meet the needs that your city government aren't meeting. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's inhumane, and it's not even, like, politically wise. So I'm confused about, I mean, I'm glad that he's just that out front about being an asshole, but I'm confused about how he thinks that he can sit in his ivory tower and look down on everybody and tell us that all of our resources are there. And, you know, these people who are providing free food and warm winter gear for homeless people, they're the people in the wrong. I don't understand that at all.
Well, there is a movement, a new movement afoot, a new order, you might say, that is sort of moving forward in our new 21st century age to place the responsibility for homelessness where it belongs, on the individual, that her faults, her problems, or his faults, his problems, the drug addiction problem, the alcoholism, the needle abuse, there's just a lack of consideration, and of course the homeless by choice, a well-known and notorious group, has taken on Santa Cruz as its own personal swamp, turning Santa Cruz's downtown avenue from a gay and well-populated and financially viable area into the kind of gloomy, grim, I don't want to say cesspool, because who wants to diss the poor merchants, the difficult area it's become. All ranting aside, Ryan Coonerty may be interested in the new political right-wing movement Take Back Santa Cruz, which has showed up in front of the Taco Bell a couple weeks ago to reclaim the streets from the drug pushers, the panhandlers, and the wild and crazy types who are making Santa Cruz a bad place to be.
I would say the gloomy environment has a lot more to do with the recession that we're in, which is a direct result of having a Republican right-wing president for 8 years. And I would say that if the constituency of Santa Cruz and, you know, the voters of the United States haven't learned their lesson in allowing a right-wing Republican to take power and then drive our economy to nothing, I don't really know what lesson they could possibly, like, what will teach them to stop looking to that kind of...
Obama will lead us forward. He's shown that kind of vision in Afghanistan and, of course, in helping the banks out with their small problems. So, well, perhaps things will turn better in the future.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But what I was going to say is that I think that, you know, when times get rough like they are, rather than taking personal responsibility, which is kind of funny because that's what they want to tell homeless people, like, we should be taking responsibility for our homelessness, when really what they're trying to do is, like, not look at the choices that they made to put themselves in a recession to begin with. Like,
and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's an interview yesterday with an anonymous user of the Armory shelter and a homeless person in Santa Cruz for the last year. There's more to it, and we'll be continuing, but perhaps, Becky, you have some comments?
I'm very moved by her account and how articulate she is and well-spoken and how specific instances are brought forward. I'm a little sobered about her initial concern about the homeless memorial a because when I saw those flags, I was very encouraged to see them, because people need to know that this is going on. But I think she's right in the sense that it has a very different effect on homeless people, seeing the names up there of other homeless people and their friends and family.
How many homeless people were actually at the memorial? Or
was it
a staff and a public PR deal, or was it, you know, for the media, or were there a lot of homeless people themselves?
I didn't see a lot of homeless people, but there definitely were homeless people there, and who talked about their friends and family, and one woman in particular who had lost her fiancé in the past year.
How many people spoke about their friends and family who were?
7 or 8. It wasn't as many as other years, which is a little odd considering there are so many names on the list.
There were 47, or actually 58 dead this year. Yeah.
I only knew one name myself, Jesse James Ballard, who died at age 44. I did not.
Well, I'll continue with this tape unless there's more you want to say.
I just wanted to explain why the memorial happens just before Christmas. It's because, we at Huff call it the time between Thanksgiving and Christmas is the season of giving a shit about homelessness. It's the only time of the year that the media are interested in homeless issues. And social service providers are aware of that, too. It's picked to be in that Christmas shopping season when people are a little more painfully aware of people who don't have family and a Christmas tree and packages and presents and come home to a big turkey dinner and all that, things that we're all sort of nostalgically attached to. So homeless people don't have that. I guess they have the Christmas dinner tomorrow at the Vets Hall. That will be going on. So
all right. Well, you can pick up your train of thought. Are you going to be at the Vets Hall tomorrow? I'm often there, but I've been getting increasingly disinclined to visit these things. Although I do show up with a tape recorder usually and make, you know, pick up people's thoughts. It's a tasty meal at the Vets Hall. You know, you get your turkey and you got to wait for about an hour in line, but you can go there. So,
I may be able to make an appearance. I'm kind of doing family things tomorrow. Yeah, my daughter's coming in from out of town, which is a rare event, and I'm really very much looking forward to that. But they'll be feeding tomorrow from noon to 4, so I might be able to get away for an hour or so and come down. I really like to do that every year.
Yeah, but you do some video work, and you also, I guess, get more information, which you write about in your blog, Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com, if I'm not mistaken.
That's how it is.
In fact, the story about the homeless memorial, I believe, is on your website.
Well, I put the executive summary there, which is about the homeless deaths in 2009, and you can read the summary that was written by Christine Sippel of the Homeless Persons Health Project, and So that's there for that. You know, so little of that information made it into the Sentinel article that Genevieve Bookwalter wrote to really downplay this really shocking death toll.
I'm going to play the rest of this now. And again, check out Becky's website. You can Google for Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking, and you'll get to it. It's Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking.blogspot.com. And there's a various sections to it, as I always point out. There's a homeless section. There's a broader political section. You can make your choices as to what you want to look at. I'm particularly struck with the homeless section because it's local and because it does involve a certain amount of original research or at least collation of the data, which you do, Becky, and I thank you for that.
And there's quite a bit on the smoking ordinance there, too, which has really got my attention because it's so clearly anti-homeless in its intent and the phony science
behind
it.
Yeah, we interviewed, I know that you you brought to my attention an English writer who writes about smoking bans throughout the world. And
yeah, Chris Snowden.
And you've actually gotten his book, and that's, you know, something you're now, who knows, if you'll add a review of his book to your article, who knows. But
Velvet Glove, Iron Fist, A History of Anti-Smoking.
Fair enough. Let's get back, however, to our reporter and victim or user, client, if you will, of the Armory and other homeless services or non-services throughout Santa Cruz.
Fewer Bush, but luckily now we have, as I've said, fewer Obama, who will make things better. But I'm sorry, I must remove my own personal hostility to some of these politicians and allow you to continue.
Right, so I think basically what's happening is they're trying to blame someone else for the economic situation that we're in.
Seem to be having a little technical problem here. Let's see if we can shape this up here.
That we're in. And, you know, rather than looking at the homeless population as a result of bad economic politics and policies that Republican right-wingers advocate for.
And Democrats did in destroying the welfare system in the mid-90s.
That as well. Rather than looking at that as the source of these issues, they're going to blame it on us. That's going to eradicate the problem. Basically, what it's going to do is it's going to increase the number of homeless people that are on that stupid fucking memorial. Like 40. How many deaths were this year?
47 official, 58 finally counted up, according to activist Becky Johnson, who attended the memorial yesterday. You were there for some of it, or?
I didn't go to the memorial. No, it made me sick to my stomach. It's going to increase the number of deaths from 78. 58 to like 150. You know, these inhumane policies that they're trying to enact aren't going to decrease the homeless population except for the number of deaths. So if Santa Cruz's policies and procedures towards the homeless continue according to Ryan Coonerty's belief system, then yeah, you'll eradicate the homeless population much as the Nazis eradicated the Jewish problem.
Well, I think when you play the Nazi card, of course, you discredit yourself, is what I'm always told. But certainly, you may get rid of some of those people before they drop dead. Now, wouldn't that be an advantage?
By getting rid of them, do you mean like getting them into like secure, stable housing with adequate health care? Or do you mean
them on to another community?
Yeah, like forcing them into San Francisco that also has inadequate resources to deal with the number of homeless people that are there. And of course, it's always the homeless people's fault. And I just have to say, like, I have to be like the when somebody, the poster girl for, you can do everything right and your health can fail in this country, and you're going to end up homeless, and there aren't going to be any resources to adequately help you. And then what's going to happen, because there aren't any adequate resources for you, is you're going to get sicker and sicker and sicker.
Is that what's happening to you?
Yeah, I'm not getting better. I never had a bladder infection before I got on the streets. I've had three. Because, you know, I can't just get up 10 feet to use the restroom. I have to, like, walk miles to use the restroom. Miles might be a bit of an exaggeration, but it's definitely not like, oh, I'm in my house and 3 feet away is my bathroom. I have to, like, when I used to sleep in my car, I had to plan around where I was going to spend my day or where I was going to spend the night, around, like, where I could use the restroom. You know, and if you're not really homeless, you don't ever have to think about those things. The bathrooms are always nearby, and if you have $2 for a coffee, you can go in anywhere to use the bathroom. And if you don't, then yeah, you get bladder infections. I had to be hospitalized for one. I didn't know what a bladder infection was, and I started bleeding my urine, and I passed out at the park. And then they know you're homeless when they take you in. They immediately assume that you're a drug addict, so you don't get appropriate care. And then when you're released, there's nowhere for you to go. I had a stomach virus, and I was hospitalized for severe dehydration, and I was released before I should have been released, and I had to come back the next day for severe dehydration. If they had kept me for a few more hours, if I weren't homeless or had private insurance, and they had kept me for a few more hours, it probably would have negated, like, my second trip to the hospital, but they don't usually think in terms of that. Like, I'm homeless, so A, I'm lying about my health. I'm just trying to get myself into a nice hospital for a few days, or B, I'm a drug addict. And so I don't get adequate health care. Like, not that Americans really get adequate, you know, we don't get great health care to begin with, but if you're homeless, like, you get less than adequate health care. And, yeah, and then, you know, I was lucky enough that I had been staying at the Pauley Loft, and so for 3 days, where I could barely, like, you know, eat, couldn't keep down fluids, I got to stay in a place where I still had to walk downstairs to use the bathroom every time I needed it.
Did you stay during the day as well?
They let me stay during the day for 3 days, and then they kicked me out.
And was this before or after Doug Loisel's management?
That was just after Doug was there. I feel like Doug came in, and he actually created a more hospitable, like, space for homeless people, because before that, like, if you had a need, it didn't matter. If it wasn't already in the rules that you could do something, then people there were just like, sorry, I don't care if you're still puking and you need to be outside, you can't be inside the hygiene bay. And it's not the staff person's fault. Like, this is coming from the people she works for. So I was given 3 days and then I got kicked out, and I still wasn't well.
It's not under Doug Loisel.
No, this is after he was terminated. This is after he's terminated.
So policies have changed. You think he would have allowed you to stay, or do you think that would have been the case under him as well?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think that he had a more humane approach to dealing with the homeless issue. I feel like, though, some of Doug's changes, he didn't really take his staff into consideration. Like, he would make changes, and he wouldn't give them time to adequately respond to some of the changes he was making. And then what I think happens there is the staff backlashes, and, you know, he comes in with this really kind of loose approach to us, and it's more compassionate, more humane. But, those sorts of changes should be well thought out, and the staff should be well prepared for them, and there should be time and consideration taken into, like, in case this happens, how do we respond? And instead, he would just kind of blatantly make changes because he's the executive director, and then his staff would have to, you know, accommodate for those changes in some manner. And then what happens is, again, the homeless population suffers because the staff aren't adequately prepared. And then what happens is he gets fired, and then they go back to doing things the old way because there wasn't proper, like,
training.
Accommodations weren't made appropriately, and to have lasting changes. You know, like, I used to have this saying, structuring sustainability. Structuring sustainability is about, like, looking at resources, appropriating them appropriately, and then, like, making sure that they can be maintained. And so when you're looking at structures that exist already, like for example, gymnasiums and schools that aren't being used over Christmas break, so resources that already exist, and then, like, how to appropriate them appropriately for the homeless population, and then how to, like, maintain them over time. So will we have money for staff if we do this, blah, 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 and addressing all those issues. But that's still something that could be done in, like, 3 months' time. Yeah. Structuring sustainability isn't about, like, a whole lot of bureaucracy and a whole lot of bitching and talking about shit to, like, you know, you kill it. But it is about maintaining structures that you put into place so that they don't fail in 5 to 6 months. You know?
Did Loisel spend more time among homeless people than, let's say, Letitia or Ken Cole did?
Yeah, I would say Doug really took the time to engage with people. I mean, he was only there for 6 months, and I know him, and I had direct interactions with him, where I've never had a direct conversation with Letitia, and she's been there. She was there before he got there, and she's still there now. I've never had a direct conversation with her. I saw him a lot more. He planned a homeless picnic, and he attended it, and he was playing with people. That was, like, the day before he got terminated, actually. I remember it. And, you know, honestly, I have reservations about celebrating homelessness. I think that, like, as a homeless person, I would rather just have my resources met adequately than, like, have picnics where... what am I celebrating exactly? That was my feeling about it.
The generosity of the surrounding community and the downtown association that cares about you, provided you stay out of sight.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes as a homeless person, what I'm supposed to do is take my donut and smile and, like, just pretend like, okay, well, this makes up for the fact that I have to go sleep on a mat on the floor tonight, wake up before anybody else, before the fucking sun, and then sit out all day in the cold, because a donut is going to really, like, improve the situation. And so that's why, like,
good homeless person, more donuts?
I get really frustrated because I don't like being homeless. I don't think it's an appropriate condition for people to find themselves in, and I don't think I should have to be happy about it. But I also don't want to have resources not developed to properly address the issue. So I have a lot of frustration. I feel often like I'm stuck in a hard, hard place, and there's not adequate resources for me to get out of it. And as a matter of fact, you know, I have now an eviction on my credit report. There's all of these issues that exist for long-term kind of, like, they're long-term kind of issues. They're short-term issues and long-term issues. So hopefully, like, what would be a short-term issue normally for me is, like, my medical problems. Like, if there was appropriate response to my medical problems, those would be short-term issues. And then the long-term issues would be, like, wow, I got evicted, and, like, my finances are all fucked up now, and these are things I'm going to have to, like, spend time addressing. And that kind of support structure, like social workers and legal advice, things like that, doesn't exist at shelter services, and they need to. So, I feel like my throat's getting kind of dry, and
I think we'd better stop this right now. Again, Anonymous One, I want to thank you for taking the time to
run it down for us.
Thank you for providing this resource for homeless people to address their needs, and thank you very much.
We should say that if you had the opportunity, you might come into the studio between 6 and 8, but you can't because...
I have to be at the armory at 5.
And there you have it. Because you can't really be held responsible to get up there yourself at an appropriate time, but you need to be monitored in order to make sure that you don't fall off the wagon, right?
You know, that's an interesting thing, because I've been looking at the issue a lot, and I feel like there are people, I'm not one of them, but there are people who have a lot of psychological problems, which is why they're homeless, and the monitoring of them in the evenings, I actually get better sleep at the armory than I did at the loft, because I had psychologically unhealthy people in like a freer setting at the loft. And they would yell out at night, people would argue with each other, there was bickering. I got less sleep in an unmonitored environment with other homeless people than I am at the loft where they're being monitored. And
at the armory where they're being monitored.
Sorry, yeah. I'm getting better sleep at the armory than I was. Just because I feel like if anybody gets up and tries anything, there's someone watching them. Whereas I had military training,
I might have.
Yeah, but I had an incident where a woman came into the loft drunk, and she's not supposed to come inside if she's inebriated. She came in after 10, which she's not supposed to do. I was already asleep. She touched me at my back while I was sleeping, and because I was asleep, I immediately thought I was being raped, because that was just my immediate assumption, being woken up and being touched in a place where, like, I know I shouldn't be. And I turned around, and I'm glad I saw her face before I hit her, because my immediate response was, like, to kill whoever was trying to rape me. And then I recognized her. I calmed down. And then I started, like, I screamed, actually, when I was waking up, and then I turned around and I saw her. And it was such a frightening experience. And unless you've lived in a communal...
There was an unanticipated interruption. We're going to finish this, and then of course, we'll have a commercial from one from our guest or co-host or whatever your position is at the moment. But stay tuned, folks.
It's like that. Like, you don't understand what it's like. You don't know what it's like to live 12 other women in an enclosed space like that. And the armory has actually been the best sleep I've had since I've been homeless. So I don't think that the monitoring of people who have, like, a lot of problems is necessarily a bad thing. I think that there are a lot of kids on the street who want to stay up and do things that they would normally do if they had a house. You know, they want to be out, they want to be alive, they want to hang out with other friends, they want to party and have fun. I think that, you know, some of them are doing way, way, way harder drugs than people with housing do, but I bet you $20 if they had, like, better... If they had any kind of resources, anybody taking care of them, that a lot of their drug issues would go away. But if I weren't 30 and in pain, then I probably would be a lot less likely to be staying up at the armory. It's just I'm actually grateful that I have a place to lie down at like 5:30, 6 o'clock at night. And the fact that I have to be up at 5 is really my only complaint. If I could sleep in until 10, I'd be a much, much happier, healthier person.
We'll take that up with the comandante. And again, thank you anonymous one.
And that's almost it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Uncle Dennis is moving into the studio, but Becky, you have a few closing remarks.
Yeah, I do. Somewhere. No, I wanted to invite people to come and see my blog, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking. Some of the articles that are there in addition to the homeless articles that I already mentioned, I have some really interesting information about immunizations with for not the H1N1 swine flu vaccination, but for the previous flu vaccines. The Mayo Clinic did a huge study that studied all cases of juvenile hospital admissions in a 10-year period at the Mayo Clinic. And then they checked whether they had been previously immunized or not. And they kept a database. And they just published the results last spring. And the results were that children who had gotten the immunization were hospitalized subsequently three times the rate of the children who had not been immunized, mostly for asthma. So they weren't necessarily getting the flu, but they're getting asthma and going to the hospital for it. Mayo Clinic, I mean, this is a really... thing. I also have a really interesting article about mammograms versus breast thermography. Apparently, if we were using breast thermography instead of mammograms, it would cost less. You can use breast thermography on women 40 to 50. You can use it on women who have dense breast tissue.
Becky, this is fascinating, but it's not really the topic of my show. But I would encourage people to go to your website to look up these issues, because I know you do a lot of research. And you also, I think, for more important for me, is you cover and counter mythologies, demonologies, and bigotry in the Sentinel with great regularity. In fact,
there's the article about the
Huff
Parade.
You're something of a punching bag, actually. Yeah. For the bigots. But I think that, you know, you articulate a lot of important issues. And we have about 4 minutes left in the show. Uncle Dennis is coming up next with From the Cream to the Dregs, a very aptly titled show, by the way, We're the Cream. And, of course, I leave it to your imagination as to who the dregs are. Try to be quiet back there, Dennis, during my show. Dennis can sometimes be a rowdy fellow. He's bringing in some alcohol with
him. You believe that...
See how
you're
he's the preempting the mic here. He's invading my.
Open.
He's invading my show. If I did this on his show, you'd hear him ranting. The control freakness would just explode throughout the entire studio. But what do I get during my show? Impromptu remarks. Well, that shows the kind of tolerant guy I am.
Well, I felt I needed to respond to some of the innuendo.
Oh, of course. Well, innuendo, if you don't mind, Dennis. I like it more.
Okay,
you know.
Let's do a Christmas carol.
Becky's going to try to sing a Christmas carol.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, I can sing just fine.
All right. Well, let's have you sing.
Don't be trashing me ahead of
you
time.
You have 3 minutes.
Like
actually, you have about 2.5
minutes,
Becky. Well,
why don't you
Becky?
Sing
go
with
ahead.
Me, Robert? You have a wonderful
Well,
story.
I don't know. We'll see. I'll listen first, and I may join in.
I'm looking for... The
Becky's sticking out.
We
actually,
here.
before we leave, I want to let you know that there may well be another Huff sing-along and sipping soup downtown coming up in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. If so, it will be announced on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz.
Ready?
You go ahead. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. No, we were interrupted by a caller. Thank God. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Oh, like you can get a caller on the air.
And
what's the difference between Jesus and a picture of Jesus?
Tell me, caller, you irreligious dog.
You only takes one nail to hang a picture of Jesus.
Oh, dear.
Thank
you so much.
Cheery thought on Christmas Eve.
What a tasteless comment. Thank you, caller.
This song will fit right in with
that
caller.
Go ahead, Becky. Sing it up.
All right. God rest ye merry gentlemen, but not in Santa Cruz. Merotkin's got a sleeping van, he'll sight you if you snooze. And if you're warm beneath your quilts, your blankets you will lose. Bad tidings, not comfort or joy, comfort or joy. Bad tidings, not comfort or joy. Better not sleep. Nor
the sidewalks are for business use, so
don't delay or sit. We friendly cops with ticket books, 300 bucks a hit. They'll show up fast in squads of four, as fast as you can spit. Sad tidings, not comfort or joy. Comfort or joy. Sad tidings, not comfort or joy. Yet this was made for all of us, and not just for the rich. Watch out for hosts who prowl the streets with smiling as they snitch. And if you're mad, then just be glad that you know which is which. Mad tidings, not comfort or joy. Comfort or joy. Mad tidings, not comfort or joy.
And those are three verses from the fine kinds of songs you'll be able to join in if you do some Huff sing-alonging. So keep tuned to IndieBay.org. Give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Or perhaps tune in on Sunday to get more of our exciting adventures at 9:30 in the morning here on 101.1 Free Radio Santa Cruz. Coming up next, it's From the Cream to the Dregs. Very soon, that is. You got, put yours in. Very good.
The Allman Brothers there for you live. Uncle Dennis here in the studio, finally on a Thursday night. And welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s. Right here from Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. Just in here on a Christmas Eve. And we're going to, Santa brought Uncle D some records a little early, some vinyl. And so we're going to be getting into that in a minute. meanwhile, just hang in there and we will have rock and roll till 9 o'clock when the Earth First Update will be broadcast. And then, of course, at 10 o'clock, the Spotlight Group of the Week. But, we might be doing something special next week. Robert and I are talking about a New Year's Eve special. So perhaps we'll see what's going on. There's stuff that could be happening. So stay tuned to Free Radio. It's your pirate radio. Here's some Fleetwood Mac.
The day goes to sleep and the full moon wakes. The night is so black that the darkness cooks. You turn around, making me do things I don't want. Trying to keep